Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast, which is an operational resilience refresher. My name's Nick Gumbley, and I'm an associate director and lead the cybersecurity practice at FSCom. And I'm joined by my two colleagues today, Will Finn and David Norton.
Morning, everyone. My name is Will Finn. I am a senior manager at FSCom in the cybersecurity practice.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Norton, and I'm a senior manager at the payments area of FSCom.
Thanks, both. As I said, so today's podcast is going to be a refresher on operational resilience. And I guess the first question you might ask is, why are we doing a refresher now? So I think the key date was the 31st of March. So the deadline for your self-assessment was the 31st of March, 2022. And so the 30th of September seemed like a good date for us to start thinking about operational resilience again, given that we are 6 months down the line from that initial deadline. So that's the reason that we have decided to do a podcast on operational resilience again. And we're going to talk through some of the things that we've seen at our clients and some of the issues that we've found since we last spoke in the webinars prior to 31st of March 2022. And we also did one, I think, in October 2021. So we just thought it was a nice way to kind of summarize where we should have got to and what we think we should be doing between now and the end of the transitional period in March 2025. So why are we here? As we all know, we're not going to dwell on this. There was the initial self-assessment deadline of March 31st that required all organizations that were in scope for operational resilience to produce a self-assessment document that was approved by the board. Now, that document wasn't required to be submitted to the FCA. However, it should be available for scrutiny and review should there be an operational resilience type incident and the FCA come and ask for it. It's probably worth noting as well that the FCA have since March 31st this year asked some volunteer organisations if they can review their self-assessment documents to assess the quality of those. So where are we? We're 6 months down the line. There's a number of activities that we think should have happened post 31st of March. And our clients that we speak to are all working to try and implement the issues that they documented and discovered as part of the self-assessment exercise. I know you had quite a lot of experience working with clients up to that point, David. So I don't know if you want to summarize some of the key things that you saw whilst working with clients.
Yeah, so thanks, Nick. Yeah, obviously, I worked quite intensively with our clients up until that point of getting the self-assessment document. And as you mentioned, since then, there's been a fair bit of canvassing and discussion around the production of those self-assessment documents. I think if I was to summarize what we've found and what we've been able to uncover, there are four main points. First one's around scenarios. The FCA, obviously, in their original guidance, talked about a severe but plausible scenarios to be calibrated. I think the general feeling was that these scenarios that were put in the self-assessment weren't severe enough. What they're really talking about are scenarios that go beyond, if you like, normal business as usual, business continuity planning type scenarios, to a scenario which severely affects the business, and in particular severely has the potential to severely affect clients and or the market. So whenever you're devising scenarios, the FCA certainly are looking for those types of severity scenarios. I think the second point is around testing. A lot of the work that we did, and it is important to note here, for the purposes of the self-assessment document, it was said that the testing that was to be carried out was limited to the setting of impact tolerances within the self-assessment document. So that's fine. However, what the FCA and the other regulators are looking for now is to take that to the next stage, if I can put it that way. They're looking for real world simulations of scenarios, testing all of the processes that were included within the self-assessment document, including within that your people, your technology, your third-party suppliers, etc., and really doing an in-depth test, putting the important business services under stress. The other point was that there was a little bit of, let's say, discussions whenever pulling together the self-assessment document on just how much and how wide the actual input from all of the areas of a firm was, as far as pulling that operational resilience document together was. We need to be sure that all of the business are included within the self-assessment document, within the operational resilience responses. That's extremely important. The board, as was mentioned, should have signed this off. They should have been kept up to date the whole way through, and they should drive the input from other areas of the business. And the last point I wanted to bring up, and it is being discussed in a more general area, but as far as operational resilience is concerned, that area around third-party suppliers and outsourcing in general, making sure that the suppliers or the outsourcers that you have are well monitored, they can meet their obligations, and more importantly, that those obligations that you've set, whether it be SLAs, KPIs, actually meet the impact tolerances that you need. If they don't, then the FCA and regulators are expecting that you go back, you renegotiate, and if necessary, actually find new suppliers. So those are the four main areas that I would briefly mention just now.
Thanks, David. And I think one of the things that you just touched on, I'd like to explore in a little more detail. And the reason for that is supply chain security has been an issue from a cyber resilience or a cyber security stroke information security point of view for a number of years. It's been tackled as part of an information security team's remit, I guess. How do you tackle it? Well, it's a difficult one because you have to categorize your suppliers so you know who poses the biggest risk to you as a receiver of those services. So you need to first and foremost to categorize the suppliers, and then what do you do once you've got that information? You need to do something with it. You need to either audit them, you need to look at their the service to you need to look at the SLAs, and you need to see if their controls and the way that they supply you with the service and the way that they secure your data, if you share data with them, that they do it in a way that's compatible with your controls and that supports your business continuity and disaster recovery arrangements. So when we're talking about supply chain security within operational resilience, it's can that third party support you to ensure that your the delivery of your services is going to remain within the impact tolerance when put under stress. And I think the other thing to note, just quickly in summary of the supply chain security, is the fact that really highlights that this is a business wide issue. You know, operations and operational resilience would probably not come under information security, but it just shows that the whole service, the end-to-end service delivery across an organization needs to be factored in when you're talking about operational resilience, and supply chain security is a really good example of that.
Yeah, and I would just add that it is very much a hot topic, particularly around, Nick, the idea of large third-party suppliers, be that cloud companies or whatever they may be. And it is a hot topic, and it's very much a live discussion. And it's something to bear in mind when you do go into the next stage.
Yeah, and I think as we move through what we think clients need to be doing between now and March 2025. I think we'll probably come back and talk a little bit more about third-party supply chain and the fact that they need to be factored into any testing that is carried out in the next 2.5 years.
Let's move on to the next, and I think the real focus of this conversation for us, which is the work we've been doing with clients and how we have structured that work to take people through a continuous improvement approach to meeting the requirements for operational resilience.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, and I think that's really important. So the continuous improvement lifecycle, as we've been calling it, was developed primarily to address how you take operational resilience forward. As we know, the self-assessment document was produced, it was approved, everyone breathed a sigh of relief on the 1st of April and probably wanted to forget about operational resilience. It always felt a little bit like GDPR in 2018 when as soon as the date was passed, everyone just kind of forgot about it for a little while because they'd spent so much time and energy putting their plans together. But I think that the issue with operational resilience is we only have 3 years across the transitional period to do all of the things that we need to do. And that is to ensure that we can operate within our impact tolerances and that we've done severe and plausible testing to ensure that we can remain inside those impact tolerances. So how did we address this from FSCom point of view? We developed what we call our continuous improvement lifecycle, as Will mentioned. And the first milestone within that lifecycle was to take the self-assessment and turn it into an operational resilience framework. So what do we mean by that? I think the self-assessment itself was probably a presentation, be it PowerPoint or be it a Word document, that summarized how important business services were identified, impact tolerances calibrated, how the testing was completed, etc. Now that isn't that, that's just a document that tells you what we did, why we did it, and when it was approved. What we needed to do was turn that into something that was a living, dynamic document or approach that would allow us to move through the three years that we've got up until March 2025 and ensure that each element of operational resilience, each function of the business, each important business service was revisited and reviewed and checked to make sure that it was supporting the delivery of the service and it was allowing us to stay within our impact tolerances.
Yeah, just to cut in there, sorry, Nick. What I would say is, and it's a point that's probably extremely important within the self-assessment document. There should have been certain vulnerabilities within that, identified within that self-assessment document. And that's really what you're using as your bedrock for your continuous improvement life cycle. How are you going to test those vulnerabilities? How are you going to remediate those vulnerabilities?
And that's a really important point. That's essentially what is milestone two. Take those vulnerabilities that were identified in your self-assessment process and then use the time that we've got available, certainly during 2022 and up to probably middle of 2023, to ensure that you've looked at those vulnerabilities and you've closed them off. There probably are a number of areas of the business that may have had a vulnerability identified, not least the one that we touched on earlier around supply chain security. I would expect a lot of organizations would have to revisit their SLAs or revisit their support contracts, certainly that they have with those third-party suppliers, to make sure those contracts remain fit for purpose. SLAs are supportive of the delivery of our services to our customers, and therefore those third parties are helping us to remain within impact tolerance. So I think identifying the vulnerabilities is the key next step from development of the operational resilience framework. And once you've identified what those vulnerabilities are and begun to complete your remedial activity, then I think you are in a position where you can move towards completing and devising those all important severe and plausible scenarios that you need to test over the course of the next 2.5 years that demonstrate to the FCA that you can remain within impact tolerances if there's an operational resilience event. So I think milestone one. Sorry, go on, Will.
Just a quick one, really, and it's to re-emphasize the point that these activities, while there is a new emphasis and there are new terms being used, terms perhaps which we haven't been used in organizations previously when planning for business continuity and disaster recovery, so terms like impact tolerances, vulnerabilities, etc., this is an enhancement of the work that you are already doing. So by identifying vulnerabilities, that you're already working to identify and work with information security risk, you will already be aware of vulnerabilities in your infrastructure. And the emphasis here is making sure that this is a whole organization approach. And your senior managers and your board will want to know what your vulnerabilities are. And these need to be very clearly addressed again in your strategy for operational resilience. Which of course is your strategy for information security. They are largely the same thing. And make sure that you have the organization's support, you have clear approval authorization from your board. And of course, the most important thing of all is you have budgetary support. The board has identified, accepted the importance of this and is prepared to pay for it. So I just wanted to add that in there with my governance, risk and compliance hat. This should align very clearly with what you guys are already doing in information security. It's an enhancement. It is not it's not new activity. It's an enhancement of what you guys are already doing.
Yeah, thanks, Will. I think as we move through that life cycle and addressing the vulnerabilities is really key. Because that will inform how or what your plausible scenarios are going to be, and then allowing you to devise the tests and actually start to complete the tests that are going to demonstrate operating within impact tolerance. And we're really getting to the key issues, I guess, or the key part of your transitional period between now and March 2025, getting that severe and plausible testing devised, getting the scenarios devised, executing those tests, and then taking the output from those tests and the feedback that you're obviously going to produce, where a test went well and where it didn't go quite so well, and certainly where it was identified that you couldn't operate within impact tolerance as a result of that test, that all then needs to be factored into business change. And I imagine that will impact a number of business units and functions across the organization to make sure that anything that's been identified as a weakness is addressed and change is implemented in those functions to address the issue, as we said. I think it's also, as part of that life cycle, worth factoring in live events. We know that the businesses are actually operating. We're operating in a live environment when we are all in production, if you like. So events are going to happen. There might be a cybersecurity event. A third party supplier may go under. They may fail in their SLA, in their supply of a service to us. And those are live events that we're likely to log and monitor anyway. And I think the live events that occur in a business as usual capacity should be reviewed and monitored, and the results of those factored into our operational resilience approach, because they will help us. I guess that they will form tests that we can measure against our operational resilience approach to make sure that the business is still able to function and he's still able to serve the customers appropriately. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on the testing, David, that you've been working with clients on.
Yeah, I think it's important that not only do we test the technology, if that's the best way to put it, but we look at the whole process as a general. Operational resilience and its instigation was really looking at disruption from a client point of view or from a market point of view. So it's important that whenever from setting your impact tolerances, from looking at your processes as a whole, that you're really looking at it with that lens on, from, you know, what will affect our clients. It could be technology. In fact, it's more than likely to be technology. It could be your people. It could be whatever it may be, and devise that way into your testing, into your scenarios, and making them severe but plausible. So I just wanted to stress that it's not simply a business event. What this is really looking at it from the client's point of view and your delivery of important business services to the client.
I'd like to add, just again, in terms of picking up again on the budgeting point, severe and plausible testing will require quite a lot of focus, quite a lot of planning, and it may involve, it needs to be resourced properly, essentially. So that really should be part of your budget request to your board and part of your program, so that these tests can be done properly, and that requirement for severe and plausible is met for the FCA.
Yeah, thanks, Will. And I think one of the observations that I've seen, certainly up to the 31st of March and beyond, when we've been talking to clients, is the need for senior organization. You can't do this operating from a silo within a particular function in a business. This needs to be approached at an overall business level, because the commitment in terms of financial support, and also from a resource point of view, from essentially the people that are going to run the project, can be quite significant, I think, over the course of those 3 years. So it's really important to get a senior stakeholder that understands operational resilience, understands the objectives and what we're trying to achieve between now and 2025, and is able to commit resources to that program of work. It probably won't be full time, and I certainly wouldn't expect it to be full time, but those people need to be available and supportive of the operational resilience program as it moves through its various phases throughout the continuous improvement life cycle. And I think that brings me on to the last kind of milestone within that life cycle, I guess, which is to monitor and have a view of what's going on from a business point of view. So horizon scanning, essentially. All businesses evolve, all businesses are seeking to grow. Usually there will be acquisitions, there'll be new markets, there'll be new geographical locations that we might enter into over the course of the next 3 years. And it's the board that's likely to understand what the objectives are and what the strategy is, I guess, over the next 3 years, and how that may impact operational resilience. Because we don't want to sit down at a business unit level, at a functional level, and devise our operational resilience framework without having any idea what's going to go on in the rest of the business. And then suddenly, 2 months before March 2025, we're handed some new important business services that we need to review, set impact tolerances for, and test in a severe and plausible way, and we haven't got enough time to do it. So that's why I think it's really key to get senior level support within the organization, both from a program support level, but also that will allow you to do that horizon scanning, so you can understand the way the business is going to evolve over the next 3 years.
That alignment with business planning is critical in order to embed operational resilience as part of business as usual. So ensuring that business functions, business plans, and the business services, business plans incorporate operational resilience activities, prioritized, of course, with how important they are to the actual business itself and those decisions, those risk decisions that have been made by your board.
Yeah, and I think as we're moving towards the end of the podcast, what do we think, or what have we seen, I guess, over the last 6 months? So we've seen Very much a response, a positive response to get the self-assessments in place. And we've also seen a very positive response to develop those self-assessments into something that's workable and dynamic, as we were calling it, to help businesses to take operational resilience forward. But I think now is the time to really galvanize the people that are responsible within those functions from an operational resilience perspective to make sure that you are tackling those vulnerabilities and actively devising those severe and plausible scenarios that will enable you to test in a meaningful way whether you can stay in those impact tolerances. And I think the breather that we talked about, where people on the 1st of April had had enough of operational resilience, I think that time has passed. And again, that's why we're doing the podcast today, which is to remind people that we are now 6 months on, and there's only 2.5 years left of the transitional period. And we need to make sure that those vulnerabilities and more severe tests are being completed, but also that we're reviewing the important business services that we've got and identifying new ones, and also making sure that we have mapped them correctly across the support functions within each organisation.
Yeah, I mean, I would summarise it in three simple steps. Get organised now. The longer you leave it, the harder inevitably it will be to fulfil the obligations. Second is, it's got to be a whole business approach. All of the business areas should have input into the transitional work that needs to be done. That means getting organized, as returned to my first point. But also this idea of integrating it into how we operate as firms. It should be business as usual. And that's what we have tried to amplify within our approach to it, in that it is a continuous cycle, and the sooner you can get into the way of approaching operational resilience that way, the better.
Yeah, thanks David. So to put you on the spot again, what would be your key takeaway for the listeners of the podcast today, David?
I think I've just mentioned it, in that the 3 points that I already mentioned. I think the sooner the plans are drawing up for looking at your scenarios again, do they actually meet the FCA or the regulator's expectations, let's say? How are you going to test it? Who will be involved? What way are you going to integrate it into your business, and really start the thought process now and draw up those plans? And as Will, I think it was Will that mentioned, very important these days, what are the budgetary constraints that you're going to work under to do that?
Yeah. So thanks, David. So I guess over to you then, Will, what's your key takeaway for our listeners?
It might be useful for some organizations to engage in this from a perspective of culture change. So the reason I say that is because most organizations, all organizations, have had many, many years now of business continuity planning and disaster recovery planning and testing cycles, etc. And that worked relatively well for many organizations. For some organizations, it wasn't as well embedded as it needed to be. Operational resilience is different. This requires a culture shift. It requires a change in how organizations approach this, so that they are it's a truly organization-wide, focused very much on the core business services that the business has been set up to deliver, rather than on specific functions like IT, which business continuity has often been focused on, or facilities to do with the management of offices and the availability of offices. So that'll be the first thing, is it may be useful to think about this as a culture change. And then the second thing I would think about is who's going to own this in your organization? Who can lead this? Who's best placed to be the figurehead for it, to set the tone from the top? to engage all of those other heads of functions, heads of services, and say, this is now part of your business planning. This needs to be included when you are thinking about developing new services or adjusting new services or responding to new business opportunities. This is part of that planning exercise. This is part of that business development piece. And finally, I suppose, is for most organizations, there are probably only two budget life cycles left. So there are two budget years left before that 2025 date is upon us. So again, don't wait around, move forward with this as a priority, really, because otherwise, time is passing and there isn't much time left.
And I think that's important. Don't wait, because you don't want to be in the position where in September, October 2024, you've only got 6 months left to the end of the transitional period and you haven't done enough testing. And a lot of organizations started their self-assessment process late, should we say. So it's probably worth ensuring now, as Will said, that you're starting to think about how you're going to move forward through that program of work. So thanks for those key takeaways. And I think my key takeaway that I wanted to talk about is actually going to be a key takeaway, or to be a takeaway rather. So we talked about operational resilience, continuous life cycle, or continuous improvement life cycle throughout this podcast. So what I'm going to try and do is get that either onto the website, or we'll get it as a download that you can get when you access the podcast, and then you can have a visualization or a graphic of what we've been talking about today. And I think that operational resilience lifecycle probably drives the bulk of the conversations that we've been having with our clients since the 31st of March. We've been really getting into the detail of addressing those vulnerabilities, of how we can devise scenarios. We've been talking about testing solutions, whether that's a tabletop exercise that you need to do before you devise your severe and plausible scenarios, or whether it's to develop that operational resilience framework. So we've been getting into the detail, and we've been devising those solutions to help our clients through that transitional period up to the 31st of March 2025. So if you've got any issues or concerns around operational resilience, or any questions on anything that we've touched on today, not least those milestones that we spoke about to take you through that continuous improvement life cycle, then please get in touch with us, and we'd be delighted to talk to you to see if we can find any solutions for you. So yeah, please get in touch. And thanks for listening today.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye now.